We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Oy, oy, oy!
Welcome, welcome. I like when there's big money attached to someone who I know is a good person. And it looks like there's some big money about to be attached to someone who I really have a strong belief is a good person. I am pro Derek Carr. I've been pro Derek Carr since his first game. I don't know if I'm pro Raider necessarily based on this whole Las Vegas situation, but I'm pro Derek Carr. And as long as they're here, might as well win as much as you can, right?
Yeah.
I'm not going to start crying about what's happening three, 4 years from now. Spent all the time worrying about them, bungled it for several different reasons. Or you can say, smashing success that they're going to Vegas. I don't even want to talk about that. I don't care about that anymore. What I do care is what this team looks like on the field. Will they be back in the playoffs? Are they the team that's ready to make the next leap? Looks like Derek Carr is going to be at the center of all of it, close to a deal, as Gianna just told you, reported by Adam Schefter today. Might be the highest paid quarterback in league history. Not bad for a second-round pick who hasn't played in a postseason game yet. Guy's got a tremendous amount of upside, and that's what the NBA draft is all about, and that's happening tomorrow. By the way, Scott Baer will be joining us shortly to talk about Derek Carr and money left over for that guy named Khalil, because he's going to get paid through the nose too. John Morosi will join us later this hour. We're going to talk a little baseball. By the way, chicks dig the long ball, and they must be digging this season of Major League Baseball, because I'm telling you right now, the ball is either juiced or there's a new form of steroids out there that is the players juiced and undetectable yet, because we got home runs a-popping around Major League Baseball. It has been crazy to see the balls that have been launched just here. I mean, we're only in June. Home run totals through May. By the way, for me, it's like May never happened. I was not around for May.
Yeah.
Didn't happen in May. But in 2015, there had been 1,438 home runs hit through May. 2016, about 300 more. 1,705 home runs. In this year, through May, in 2017, 1,923 home runs, almost 2,000 home runs hit through the month of May.
Wow, that's a lot.
That's a lot of home runs.
Yeah.
That's a lot of home. By the way, the Giants are hitting none of them. Practically none of them. Almost none of them. I was looking at their run differential today. The Giants are like minus 88 run differential. Any way you want to measure it, like how do you want to measure it? Win total, winning percentage, differential? Do you have your favorite pocket protector stat that you'd like to whip out and see? The Giants suck. They're worse than the Padres.
Ouch.
Like they're the Phillies now. I mean, they stink. They finally get off the schneid last night. They break a 7-game losing streak. But, ugh, watching them is like giving birth, I'm guessing. It's like giving birth to something that you know is going to be no fun or good for nothing when it's all done.
It's not their year. Not at all.
No. And it might not be their year for a really, really long time. From the Penske Auto Sales text line, says strikeouts are up too. It's a home run or a strikeout these days. You're right. I'll tell you what, the Moneyball days have pretty much been put to rest. But for a few players who can still dazzle you with their incredible on-base percentages, it is yoicks away. Swing hard, close your eyes. You're either going to run into a home run or you're going to run into a human air conditioner, just fanning everywhere. right when we got off the air yesterday. I'm talking about right when we got off the air. I didn't even hear about it until we walked back into the sports hub. So I'm talking like at 6:01, because we were done at 6 o'clock yesterday. Dwight Howard got traded. Dwight Howard traded. It gets even better than that. Dwight Howard traded to Charlotte. Gets even better than that. Dwight Howard traded while he was actually on NBA.com serving as like the guest Twitter that day. He was running NBA.com right. Twitters as it was happening, you know, telling fans, guess what? You can ask me about anything. I'm here to just spill my beans, right? Dwight Howard. So fans were asking him, you know, I'm sure there were a whole bunch of detestable, awful things being asked of him. How many baby mamas do you really have? God. Number could be as high as 8. It's definitely 5. Wasn't answering things like that. But, you know, what do you think of the Hawks' chances next year? And he's like, well, I like our chances next year if everyone stays healthy and something completely disposable. While he's answering real fan questions on the NBA Twitters, the Hornets pulled the trigger on a trade that sent Marco Bellinelli, Miles Plumlee, and the number 41 overall pick in tomorrow's draft to the Hawks in exchange for Howard and the 31st overall pick. By the way, can you see that Travis Schlenk's very first big deal with the Atlanta Hawks is getting rid of the totally useless center that just takes up space? Schlenked. Dwight got schlenked. I got schlenked once, but, you know, it's a different story and it costs a lot of money and we don't talk about things that happen in Vegas.
Oh.
Just kidding. But schlenked sounds like it might be a little dirty, right? Like, you just got schlenked.
Yeah.
Dwight Howard got schlenked.
And when the news broke, I guess he started getting tweets at him.
He went dark.
Yeah.
He went dark. He did not answer any more questions. NBA Twitter was after Dwight got traded. Few things. We want to look at this realistically. Number one, Charlotte's coach is Steve Clifford. Steve Clifford was a Orlando Magic assistant when Dwight Howard was in his heyday. So maybe he can rev the engine again if he still cares at all about basketball, which, to be honest with you, I don't know if he does. I know he likes the paychecks. But how much he likes the competition? Well, that's a big problem that Kobe Bryant had with him. Remember now, this is Dwight Howard's fourth team since what, like 2012? It's ridiculous. Laker, Rocket, Hawk, and now Charlotte Bobcat. So Kobe Bryant took one look at him. Say whatever you want about Kobe Bryant. That man competed hard, wanted to win bad. Kobe Bryant, one of the greatest players of all time, took one look at Dwight Howard and saw that Dwight did not want to play whenever he was banged up or nicked up. What's the old saying? You see it in the movie The Program, when he basically walks over to the kid and he's like, so are you hurt or you're injured? Because if you're injured, you can't play. But if you're hurt, you better play. Dwight refused to play hurt, much less injured. Dwight only played when everything was hunky-dory for him. And on that note, watch Cody Zeller and Frank Kaminsky, both Charlotte Bobcats, outplay him. But like I said, maybe his old assistant coach wakes him back up. But who knows? Because Kobe took one look at him and saw right through him. Saw right through him. And that's why Dwight wanted to leave Lakerland. Because if you don't have Kobe's blessing, Lakerland is a really tough place to exist. Back when Kobe ruled Lakerland. The other thing that happened to Dwight Howard while he was kind of mailing it in. That's right. By the way, it is Charlotte Hornets now. I keep on thinking it's Charlotte. I keep on saying Bobcats. He's a Hornet again. The Hornets, of course, moved to New Orleans. They're now the Pelicans. I get Bobcats, Hornets, Charlotte's. Pardon me. Stroke. That was without a doubt stroke. I didn't think enough hard about it to say Bobcats or Hornets. Total stroke. I apologize on behalf of the Stroke and the Damon Bruce Show and Gianna and Dwight Howard and Charlotte and New Orleans and the Pelicans. Deep apologies all around. So Kobe takes one look at him, sees right through him. He's definitely as immature as the day is long. Do you realize that he, like I said, he admits to having five kids. The rumor is the real number of mothers who have sired younger Howards could be eight.
Wow.
No one really knows. Maybe not even Dwight himself. The Lakers had to have a candy intervention with him. Before you start thinking, wait a minute, that was Lamar Odom. No, that was when Lamar Odom was a Clipper, and he needed a candy intervention too. And we all know that Lamar was really crying on the inside after all, don't we? Yes, we kind of learned that.
Yes, we did.
It's Kardashian women. They're phenomenal. But they had to have a candy intervention with him. If you're a professional athlete, and as a franchise, I have to tell you to stop eating as much candy, like, grow up.
Right.
And the other thing that happened to Dwight that actually makes me feel not bad for him, but makes him me understand his disillusion with his own career, is the league changed while he was in it. The league changed right underneath his feet. There's no team in the NBA who's throwing passes into the interior post 35 times a game to see if their center can get a high percentage shot, which we all know is now not even a high percentage shot. The game of basketball evolved while Dwight Howard was trying to figure out his way in it. And what does Dwight Howard really want? I still don't know. He wanted to be out of Orlando. Then he wanted to be a Laker. Then he wanted to be a Houston Rocket. But then he didn't want to play hard. So now he wants to be a Hawk. And now he got traded. He got schlanked. Under the file, the big move is sometimes the move you do not make. Do you realize that Dwight Howard is nothing short of one of the most important players in Golden State Warrior history? Because he never was one. Remember when Dwight Howard was really rumored to be considering Golden State, and Joe Lacob wanted to go hard after him, and they thought that he was going to be the guy that really turned the franchise around along with Curry, have a little inside-out game. Dwight Howard was going to be the guy that was going to change the Golden State Warriors, the first big free agent to sign with them ever, right? This is before Iguodala. This is before Durant. Not signing Howard brought them Andre Iguodala. How'd that work out? Left cap space for Kevin Durant and to max out Curry. How's that working out? And it forced them into the outside-inside style of basketball that has literally changed the sport of basketball forever. Dwight Howard is an evolutionary step that the Warriors might have missed out on had they actually signed him. Thank God they didn't. Speaking of signing players, a lot of talk about Derek Carr being close to signing for one of the richest deals ever. Where'd Albi go? He disappeared. We've got that? All right. Well, then, why don't you let us say hello?
We love Derek, and we want to keep him, and we're going to do everything to make sure this contract gets done.
Man, I'm ready to fight. I think that's the best way to say it.
Carr going
to
throw a wide right side. Let him out. Cooper got it. Five. Down to the goal line. He's in. Touchdown. Raiders.
I know we won 12 games. I know we went to the playoffs for the first time, but I was not satisfied because we lost our last game.
Derek, low snap. Derek looking. Derek going to lob it for the end zone for Crabtree. Did he get both feet down? Touchdown! Raiders! They blitz the safety. Carr going to lob it for the end zone for Roberts. He's got it! Touchdown! Raiders!
If we go somewhere else, we're obviously, you know, going to make the most of that and still be the Raiders. We're still Oakland's team, no matter where we're at.
Well, we'll debate that in a few years from now. But I can tell you, Derek Carr is one of the easiest guys in all sports to root for. He really is. He's a true leader. He's a 60% passer who's thrown for over 11,000 yards in just three seasons, 81 touchdowns, 31 interceptions, 12 game-winning drives, one of the lowest sack rates in football. He can make every single throw in the book. There's nothing not to like. $25 million? Yeah, I guess that's the direction it's all heading. And to talk about that from NBC Sports Bay, NBC Sports Bay Area, is that what we're calling it now? Again, stroke. I wasn't out. I was out. I didn't, you know. We're very happy to say hello to Scott Baer to talk a little Derek Carr. Scott, how you doing, man?
Pretty good, D. Bruce. How about yourself, man?
Doing very good. Thank you so much. $25 million for Derek Carr. That probably is a little bit more money than maybe Mark Davis even thought or Reggie McKenzie thought that they would have to spend this time around. But the price of business goes up every year in the NFL, and I guess it's the right time to be Derek Carr, isn't it?
Yeah, especially when it comes to franchise-level quarterbacks, because acquiring one is difficult business. And when you get one, you don't want to let one go. And this day and age, you look at the contracts. It's 25 per over the life of a nine-figure contract. And let's be honest, Derek Carr is barely 26. There's going to be another contract probably at the end of this road. And I think the real key is what kind of percentage of his salary is going to – like how much of his salary – versus how much the entire salary cap is. And it's less than what it used to be, but there are no hometown discounts here, whether it's Derek Carr, Drew Brees, or anybody else. The top dollar keeps on going up.
It sure will, and that's the way it's going to go from here on out. And it just doesn't go that way on the offensive side. The first question that automatically came to my mind is, can a team afford to pay the most amount of money on the offensive and defensive side of the ball to just two guys? If I'm Khalil Mack's agent, I am literally rubbing my hands together so hard I've started a fire in my own palms.
You just won Survivor is what happened. I really think that it's going to be a difficult task, and it's something that if you look throughout the NFL, there aren't too many examples of a top flight, top paid defensive player and a truly elite quarterback on the same team. You look at Denver, right? Von Miller and some young QBs. You look at the Saints, you got Breeze and not a whole lot of defensive guys. There aren't a lot of good examples of teams being able to survive with those two types of players. Green Bay pays Clay Matthews a lot, Aaron Rodgers a lot. So that is a challenge moving forward. That's why drafting is always going to be the key to success, especially when you're paying so much to those two guys. Now, the Raiders believe that they're going to be able to make it work because they have financial flexibility and they have so much money that they can pay up front that eventually it won't hit their cap very much in the back end. But bottom line, you are right. This is a challenge that the Raiders are going to have to face as they went through roster deconstruction and reconstruction. Now they're in put up or shut up, pay up or shut up mode. And they have to find a way to fit these big contracts in and remain competitive. It's no easy task.
You know, I tell you, I'm looking at this situation that this young man is in. It's a great situation. And we're going to know all the details of the contract when it actually gets done. And Derek said, yeah, you know, on Twitter today, it's nothing's done yet, but we're getting close. Did I read it right when I heard that he might get 25, 25, 25 in the first 3 years? So he's got $75 million over a three-year period?
That's going to be one of those kind of things that once we see how it comes out, but really it's all about guaranteed money here and how much of that, how much of that in the first 3 years is going to be guaranteed. And of course it's for injury or fully guaranteed, but if it is $75 million early, again, this is a Raiders team that if you look at the Saints, for example, they buy a lot of stuff on credit. They keep renegotiating contracts and pushing cap issues into the future. The Raiders have opened up a briefcase full of hundreds and been paying with cash, so they don't have these big salary cap albatross contracts waiting out there for them in 2018 or 2019 or anything like that. As a matter of fact, even a lot of these bigger money deals that you think could hinder them trying to get Mac or trying to get Gabe Jackson, another key point is a contract like, you know, Sean Smith, let's say. Well, after next year, there's no dead money associated with Sean Smith. So that financial flexibility creates some room for them. And they have $32 million in salary cap space right now. They haven't paid a lot of cash out. And bottom line is, going back to your point, is that the Raiders could afford to dump all that money up, like upfront players with non-guaranteed contracts over the life of their contracts. They want as much money upfront as humanly possible, and that kind of makes both sides happy. So if they can pay with cash upfront and that big front-loaded number looks big, maybe they can survive and add pieces down the road that they wouldn't otherwise have the luxury to be able to do if they follow the pay-by-credit model.
Talking Raiders with Scott Baer. What's the latest on Marshawn Lynch, man? He's like one of the oddest birds to ever fly out of the cage. He really is. He's just a weird dude. I'm not saying that's a good or bad thing, but who knows? I want to be able to say that Marshawn Lynch looks like Marshawn Lynch again. He's running behind a great offensive line, and that should equal a very good year. But I can honestly tell you that I have no idea what to really predict or expect from Marshawn Lynch with the Raiders. How are you leaning?
Yeah, I'm leaning towards a couple of different things. One, I'm not going to sit here and say, because I saw four OTA and minicamp practices with zero pads, that I know how he's going to look during the regular season. If I did that, you should hang up the phone immediately, because for a physical rusher like that, you got to put the pads on and see how he fits and things like that. And in the limited reps that we can glean information, one thing Marshawn is very good at being is mysterious, and that mystique is marketable. And the fact that he's interesting and funny, and I sort of like that he doesn't say, you know, 1,000 words per minute. But I do think that there is a possibility there that that all the burst and all the fact that, you know, he could, you know, be the Marshawn of old, and that's a couple of years back now, that there's potential in there, I think, and his enthusiasm and excitement and really knowing this is the last hurrah, whether it's 1 or 2 years, absolute maximum three, is that he may give them their all. I think the one thing I have noticed is he gets from handoff to through the offensive line in a nanosecond. And he's still that kind of thing where he always looks like his ankles are going to break, and he has surprising agility and all those types of things. But bottom line is, we don't know yet. We don't know if he's going to be able to stay healthy. We don't know how he's going to deal with the rigors of taking all those hits. But I think the one thing that I know Raiders fans are excited to see is him running behind an offensive line that expensive, that talented, and that nasty. And I think it is an intriguing part. It's part of his mystique that keeps people interested and wondering. Everything that he does next is what fans want to know, and how he can click and work with this offense. One thing I can tell you is everything I've heard about him from other people is that he's into it. He's trying, he's pushing, he's learning this offense. He wants to do well. And just like he said, he decided to come out of retirement the day the Raiders were approved to move to Vegas. He wants to show Oakland fans, Oakland kids who love this team, that a guy from their neighborhood can make it, and he can do it in person. The motivation's high, and yeah, that's step one.
I'm sure it has absolutely nothing to do with money. You know, nothing at all.
No,
just
no.
For the kids. He's running hard for the kids. Are there more Skittles around than normal?
Yeah. It's actually a funny story. It didn't happen to me. Jimmy Durkin, who works for Bay Area News Group, happened to tweet about not having enough Skittles in the media room, and Skittles sent him a case. So, yeah, there's plenty
there you
of
go.
Around out there. We can definitely taste the rainbow.
Thank you very much. Excellent way to go, especially for Pride Week. A Taste the Rainbow Skittles reference, phenomenal. Scott, thank you so much.
Thank you.
Scott Baer from NBC Sports Bay Area talking a little Derek Carr, the impending deal, Marshawn, Skittles. Will they have money for Khalil Mack? Good hit by him. We've got John Morosi coming up in about 20 minutes from right now. Before we dive into a little baseball, we got to dive back into basketball. The NBA Draft Show is going to come to you live from Warrior headquarters tomorrow. Going to tell you all about it and tell you how bad I feel for guys who are seniors these days. Next on the Damon Bruce Show. Yesterday, we promised you Jay Billis didn't make the show. Unfortunately, we just didn't hook up with him. We're going to have him on at 5:30 today.
Great.
Jay Billis with a Make Good. So that's coming up a little bit later. David Forst at 4:30, A's general manager. We're going to talk a lot of baseball with John Morosi in the next segment. But I have to share this with you, because this is something that I was talking about yesterday, and I'm sure that both Kerry Keating and John Dickinson we'll be talking about with yours truly tomorrow, live from Warrior headquarters, as we bring you the, hey, they don't have a draft pick, but we're doing a show from here anyway show.
It'll be really fun.
It's amazing that the Warriors don't have a draft pick. This is still paying for trades they made and deals they signed.
Mm-hmm.
Anthony Slater's got a great article about it. We'll get to that in just a little bit, but in a Washington Post story that I was sent today, it just kind of confirmed things that I think are wrong with the world. Gianna, one of the biggest things I think is wrong with the world is that texting people or tweeting people has just removed all amounts of compassion or empathy. Like Louis C.K. was a guest on like Conan or The Tonight Show or whatever it was. And he said something that I thought made so much sense. He said, when you were a little kid and you used to make fun of someone or say something that directly hurt their feelings, you risked something. You risked really seeing their feelings hurt.
Sure.
Or you risked getting punched in the mouth like the punk you are.
There was a reaction. Yeah. Yeah. Good point.
And we now live in a world where people can just pop off and send messages without compassion, without thought, and everyone is kind of a jagoff for it. I mean, it has literally taken the discourse on every topic in the United States of America to a level that I can only describe as a layer of hell. I mean, it's amazing. The things that you will say to a person over a text message, over a screen, over Twitter, and what you would say to a person if you were standing in front of them are like the opposite of things.
No, it's like a keyboard and a screen gives you some sort of power, but it doesn't.
It doesn't.
No, it's actually sad.
It doesn't. It's sad, and it's really, you know what it is? It's a tool used by the ultra pathetic to appear like they're tough or knowledgeable.
Yeah.
So that's one of the things that is wrong with the world. The other thing that is wrong with the world is we say that we care about student athletes, but every single message that is sent to a student athlete who has real professional potential is simply, you got to stop being a student as fast as possible. Because your 19, 20, and 21-year-old years of your profession would be the first 3 years of your NBA contract. And no one's playing for their first contract. You're playing for your second contract. So if you can make big money by the time you're 22, that's better than making big money by the time you're 24, 26. From the Washington Post, written by Ava Wallace, there is a woman named Danielle Cantor. She is a partner at David Falk's agency, Fame. And basically what she does is meets with potential draft picks in the NBA and tells them how to go about interviewing very well. Some guys need an awful lot of coaching.
Oh, sure.
Some guys have great personalities and need very little coaching. Well, Cantor remembered talking with Malcolm Brogdon. Now, Malcolm Brogdon is a Rookie of the Year candidate in the NBA this year. He went to Virginia. He got drafted in the second round as a fifth-year senior because he had blown out his knee early in his college career. And Brogdon played for the Milwaukee Bucks and is one of the big reasons, big reasons why the Milwaukee Bucks were a little something this year. Not just Giannis Antetokounmpo. It wasn't just him. There were other things happening. Not, you know, we're in an NBA where there is no one man who makes a full team anymore. So this guy, she remembered who... you know, talking to him, and she promised the general managers that he was meeting with that their conversation with Brogdon would be the best interview they ever had. Like, that's how high she was on them. And when they gave her feedback, they called her to let him know how he did. Teams basically told her that not only was she right, but they would rather vote for Brogdon than any of the people campaigning for president.
Wow.
Like, that's how impressive this young man is. I've always said it's like a secret racist buzzword to call a young black athlete eloquent. But really, any millennial these days who is eloquent and speaks on the world, it's not a backhanded compliment anymore, mm-hmm. since there's so little of it among all races.
Right.
I mean, go and talk to a 22-year-old and see if you're impressed wildly. If you are, remember that person, take down his or her number, and consider hiring them someday. Because people skills are as important as any skill set in life. So one of the things that she just knew going into the draft, that no matter how impressive he was, no matter how well-spoken he was, or consistently he outplayed younger, higher-rated NBA prospects in workouts in front of teams, that Brogdon was 23. Which took his draftability from Well, a guy who, once he got on the court, proved himself to be in consideration for Rookie of the Year, turned him into a second-round pick.
Wow.
And, you know, all he was wildly impressive because he was more physically mature, more mentally mature, more traveled. We now look at someone who stays in college to their senior year as, oh, there must be a huge flaw.
Mm-hmm.
What's wrong with him? How did he stay till his senior year? He must have something incredibly wrong with his NBA skill set. So we can't draft him. Or we want him to be younger because it's all about potential, not about reality. It's about potential. You know, you draft a 19-year-old hoping that they would grow up to be who Brogdon is at 23.
But a lot happened with Brogdon from 19 to 23 to get him to that point, which
right.
he wouldn't experience at 19 in the NBA.
It's called a full 5-year college experience.
Right.
It's having gone through your first major injury, having gone through your first major rehab, playing for Tony Bennett at Virginia, hands down, man down defense all day long. It is a defense first basketball program, and that is one of his skill sets. You know, the hottest commodity in the NBA draft is always upside. How about actual talent?
Yeah, that should mean something.
Now, there are kids who come out very young who go on to be phenomenal. It shouldn't be an either or, but the entire system is set up to make sure that if you got NBA talent, you're looking to jump into the NBA before you're even a man, before you've even grown up. And I'm not saying that you got to go to college to grow up or be a man. I'm not here to tell you that that if you didn't go to college, you aren't a man or you aren't grown up. But what I will say, without apology or clarifying, is that an education is a good thing, period, end of story. A college experience is a good thing, period, end of story.
Well, you should value an education just for the mere fact of what could happen in an instant for some of these players with injury, and there goes their whole future.
Exactly.
But at least you have an education to fall back on and a future there as well. And if you're smart, if you're eloquent, if you speak well, if you're articulate, all of these things, you can go places.
Draymond Green would not have been ready to play, would not have been drafted as a freshman coming out of Michigan State. Draymond Green was a role player at Michigan State his freshman year. By the time he was a senior year, he was the Big Ten player of the year. He grew up as a man. He grew into his body. He might still go clock guys back in East Lansing whenever he's there, but, you know, I would say that it certainly paid off for Draymond to stay in school. And it's paid off now that he's making huge money.
Sure.
It's just a shame that the incentives to come out as young as possible are so intoxicating that the, hey, you know, I could be a millionaire today or put a few years into this and really be good at my craft and come out good at what I do, not maybe good at what I do. You know, the risk of an injury could tear it all down. It's just sad. It's gross. And that's something we're going to talk about with Jay Billis at 5:30. But next, it's John Morosi on the home run-a-palooza that has become Major League Baseball, and we'll also talk about where the A's are going and why the Giants stink.
Markakis, look it up. It is out of here. The hot spot of the ballpark, and Slater finds it, and the Giants take the lead.
Is Austin Slater going to be the guy? I mean, it wasn't Arroyo. It wasn't a lot of Giants that you hoped were the guy, and didn't turn out that way. Sent him up, pull him down, up, down, up, down. Now you got confusion. Now you got a career that is like, you're John Bowker. Maybe Slater's going to be the guy. I hope he is, because the Giants need to turn this thing around. It's going to be almost impossible to do it. What are they, 20 games back already? We haven't even reached the 4th of July. My goodness. John Morosi, Fox Sports and MLB Network. Great to have as a weekly guest, and it's great to have him back on. How are you, John?
Outstanding, Damon, and my friend, I thought we had had our last John Bowker reference in the Giants conversation, but you brought it back. That brought a smile to my face.
Don't make me go Dan Ortmeier on you. I mean, we got a list of
Negro,
guys.
Lance Negro, we can talk about him.
Oh.
There were a lot of guys right around that same time.
Don't make me bring up Shinjo, but here we
That's
go.
Right.
John,
That's right.
It seems to be a disaster, not on the field, but when you look at the levels of the organization, there's not a lot coming. There is huge sunk cost into guys that either aren't producing, are hurt, or are only playing once every 5 days. And I'm not saying that Bobby Evans has done a bad job since taking over for Brian Sabian, because I think that Brian Sabian is in on every decision that Bobby Evans is or isn't cleared to make. It just seems like things went from really good out of nowhere to really bad out of nowhere.
It did. And this really got bad quickly. And I was as surprised as anybody. I had them, of course, we talked about it before, Damon, that I had them winning the National League out of spring training, which I don't think is going to happen.
Probably not.
At this stage. I think I can comfortably say I will have whiffed on that prediction. I'll say this. The fact that they have a World Series title, multiple, three of them, of course, this decade, makes it easier, I believe, to have those very difficult conversations and to explain to the fan base, here's what we have to do. The tricky part comes when you look at the roster, Damon. Where do you see guys that have fair value at what money they're making right now that other teams are going to really want and have a big time market for those players that does not diminish your ability to win in the long term? That's a really delicate.
Right. If you're willing to go into free agency with Johnny Cueto, Cueto maybe, but the fact that he is on the market next year makes him less appealing.
It does. And Damon, he has not pitched well enough. To me, if Cueto was posting the numbers like he has had in the past with his Cy Young caliber season, and if his ERA was 2.5, and if he was the name as he was on the trade market when he went from the Reds to the Royals, then it's different. But there are simply too many other reasonable comparables that are doing a similar job to what Cueto was doing, where there is not that lingering uncertainty of the opt-out and what that's going to mean. And I'm speaking, of course, of the likes of a Gerrit Cole, Sonny Gray in Oakland, although last night's outing did not do him any favors, especially against the team in Houston that likes him or has interest in him. Of course, that didn't really help to give up five in the first inning. So I think you look around Jose Quintana, Jason Vargas, there are other pitchers for whom the overall paradigm is a lot more clear-cut than what it is for Cueto right now. So I think as badly as Damon, you and I might say the Giants need to have a reshaping of their roster, I just don't see that many makeable putts right now for this team. Yes, you may trade Eduardo Nunez, maybe a bullpen piece, but if you're talking Samardzija, Melanson, I'm not sure that those trades would bring back the type of prospects that would validate doing what really at that point in time would be a dramatic total rebuild if you move the likes of Melanson and Samardzija.
It's going to be tough to move Melanson with the money that he's making and the season that he's having. His 11th save came yesterday, but you know, it really felt like he was going to be the missing ingredient from a team that last year didn't have a closer and it cost them in the DS. And if they add a closer at whatever price, there's the missing ingredient. Pay for your missing ingredient and go forward and prosper. What has gone wrong with Melanson?
Well, his stuff has regressed a bit, I think, from last year, Damon. And it's interesting. You look at the way that trade transpired last year for Pittsburgh and Washington. One of the prospects he was traded for, back to the Pirates, a left-hander by the name of Felipe Rivero, has outperformed him since the date of that trade. So the Nationals feel like they lost one of their better relievers and, of course, only had Melanson for 2 months and then one playoff series. And then, of course, now the Giants sign him to a large contract, one of the biggest ever for a closer. And there's an old saying that one GM has told me many times, which is every contract is immovable from a free agent standpoint on the day it's signed, because by definition, nobody else was going to that level. And now you look at Melanson and maybe the Nationals would have, and I've heard a lot of different thoughts about would the Nationals and Giants consider a Melanson deal? Would Melanson, obviously, because of his no trade protection, would he consider a deal of that type? I was told, I spoke with a source with some good knowledge of where the Giants are right now, who said, unlikely. They just don't see that happening right now. But to your point, the stuff has regressed, and that I think is one reason why the Giants might at least entertain the idea. But it doesn't sound like right now, from talking to my sources, Damon, there's much traction going on right now for a Melanson trade possibility.
We're going to have David Force join us next hour, and I doubt he's going to want to answer this question, so I'll have you do it for him. Is his phone ringing off the hook for Sonny Gray? I know that you just wrote that he's one of the top five starters available. Has the game of bingo already begun?
Well, I think it has to an extent. I was actually told by a couple different GMs this week, Damon, that really the heavy lifting of the offers and the really substantial conversations, those have not started yet. I think maybe those preliminary check-ins, hey, who would you consider moving? What's your overall appetite? I think very preliminary talks have, and certainly the A's are out there scouting the minor leagues of the contending clubs to see who would fit. Certainly the minor leagues of a team like the Astros, the minor leagues of a team like the Dodgers, who, by the way, because of the deal last year with Hill and Reddick, they know those guys very well. So I think there is a good foundation there. And, of course, with Forrest's relationship with Far Anxiety in L.A., there's a good foundation there where if they have a conversation to get things started again for Gray and the Dodgers, that could make sense. But, Damon, he has to pitch better. And he is in that conversation, as I wrote today at MLB.com, because of what he's done in the past. He's been an all-star in the past. He was a Cy Young contender and finalist back in 2015, but really not much since then. He has struggled. And last night, again, that was a real show-me type of outing. You're facing the Astros, who the world knows have interest in you. That is an established fact in baseball right now. The Astros have some interest in Gray. So you're facing a team that you know has interest in you, and you give up five in the first.
Yeah.
And I think that just speaks to it, Damon, how it's been hard for the A's to be able to present Gray and for David Forrest and Billy to be able to talk to teams and say, listen, he is still the guy that almost won the Cy Young a couple years ago. But just the numbers, Damon, that they don't add up and say that. So I think that at some point in time, the health is a concern. I had one GM tell me yesterday that he would certainly take Cole over Gray because of the health factor, the durability factor. So Gray has to, for me, I think for him to be traded, he's got to show that he's healthy, and he's got to really put together some very good, consistent outings start after start for the next month to really get back on the radar for some teams. And frankly, because of the All-Star break coming up, time is shorter than you might think to prove that to other teams.
Why are home run totals up at an almost steroidian rate? Is the ball juiced? Are the players on to the next thing that they still don't have a test for? I mean, we got home runs that officially have to raise a little cause for concern.
Yes, great question. Justin Verlander, and speaking with the Detroit News and M Live and among the Detroit media here this week, raised his hypothesis about the ball. And I think if I were to be given the truth serum, if I had to answer and I had to bet the house on it, so to speak, I would say that the ball is different than it was in the past. The ball is different, I think. Now, is it different at a stark level from the midpoint of the 2015 season? I'm not sure. But I do think the ball has more life in it than it did a number of years ago. Why I don't think, and certainly I'm not naive enough to stand here and say, Damon, that the game is totally clean, there is no PED use whatsoever, I can't say that. But what I can say is that I think the fact that we see uniformity among the home run hitters now, you've got second basemen, you've got middle infielders, you've got guys that are big, small, everybody's hitting home runs. So that tells me that it's not necessarily these guys are using and these guys aren't. I think it's a systemic, it's not really a problem, it's a systemic trend. And the balls are, I think, they're different, whether it's the way they're wound. I mean, they may have the same material, but they could be wound tighter. The seams could be different. There's a lot of different things that could happen with a baseball. But I think the fact that we have seen now so many hitters, and Josh Donaldson, of course, on the East Bay for a number of years with Oakland.
You're not allowed to talk about him on this station. Do not bring up Josh Donaldson under any circumstances.
Sorry about that. But I will say this. He is sort of, Damon, the godfather of the launch angle school of swinging. And he has had a lot of success with it, and other hitters have taken note of it. J.D. Martinez is one of them in Detroit, and they have followed that same school of thought. So I think as a result, we are seeing everybody talking right now about launch angle, and that, my friend, is not going to change anytime soon.
I'll tell you what, you got a great launch angle. There's no doubt about it, John. Thank you, as always, for joining us. You can check John on MLB, MLB.com, MLB Network, Fox Sports. He's the man, and we're happy to have him as always. Thank you, John.
Damon, my pleasure. Always enjoy the conversation. Thanks so much.
Good to talk to you. John Morosi here on 95.7 The Game. We will not bring up Donaldson by name if we can help it, just to make fans get through their summer and their lives more palatable. That's what we're here doing for you, A's fans. And again, there's talk about a new stadium. This is good, right? You can point to that, and then you see they're in last place, and you go, oh. We will talk with David Forst about that. He's coming up at 4:30. Jay Billis at 5:30. 1 hour down, two to come still here on the Damon Bruce Show.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.